When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hello!
It is finally here.
A vaccine?
Even better. We are launching our Patreon.
It's called Two Old Queens, The Retirement Plan.
This time, instead of the gayest movie ever, we're looking for the gayest things ever.
Like, what's the gayest Madonna video?
What's the gayest section in Party City?
Who's the gayest person on the Blue Collar Comedy Tour?
We're kicking it off with an 8-episode series where we're on the hunt for the gayest Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
And for the low, low price of $5 a month, you'll have a brand new episode every week, exclusive to Patreon subscribers.
So what are you waiting for?
A vaccine?
Two Old Queens, The Retirement Plan. Link in our bio.
We really need this.
One is Mark and John's the other. They're just friends. They are not lovers. It's Two Old Queens. It's Two Old Queens. They're just sassy, not that mean. Two Old Queens. It's Two Old Queens. Now shut up.
Hello! Welcome to Two Old Queens. I'm John Flynn.
I'm Mark Rennie.
Mark, I am so excited about our guest this week. Please let everyone know who we've got with us.
Well, she's a writer, comedian. She says funny things. It's Lorraine de Graffenreich.
Hello, 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 hello. Thank you, fine gentlemen, for having me on. This is very exciting.
Thank you for doing it. Any respite from the drudgery of everyday living right now is great, right?
Yeah, you say, absolutely.
You say respite?
Respite?
Respite? That's how I always heard it. But respite? Sure, let's
make
that happen.
Respite.
Oh, I thought that you were intentionally pronouncing it respite for like flair, like to like make people think twice about it.
Maybe I just love the word spite so much that I always wanted to have
stuff
some.
Stuff it in anywhere you can.
Yeah, I always wanted to have some attention.
It's like re-colon spite. Exactly. You need to, like fuck off and
regarding
have a good time.
Regarding spite, relax a little bit, but we'll come back to it.
Right.
I used to, when I I still read books, I would read, whenever someone would write the word uniforms, I would always read it as uninformed.
Oh.
So it would always be like, the uninformed officers.
I like that.
That's a funny little quirk about me. Speaking of quirks, the movie we're going to talk about is Tim Burton has called it like his most personal film and based on Burbank. But before we get into the movie, based on his childhood in Burbank, do you have fond memories of Burbank itself, Lorraine? Like what is your, when I say the word Burbank, what do you think of?
Jay Leno.
Jay Leno.
Is the first thing that comes to mind is Jay Leno. I imagine him in like a teeny tiny like classic restored car. That's the first thing that I think of. And then I think about, like, I used to work in Burbank. I worked at an animation studio in Burbank that's called Stupid Buddy Studios. And anytime that someone would want to like meet up for lunch, I was like, yeah, you are in the right neighborhood for lunch. Burbank just has Burbank lunch everywhere. Lunch. It's just
options
like sandwiches, salads, boba places. Like there's just like food lunch spots like all over the place. Yeah.
And chains, which are like so surprisingly hard to find in like Los Angeles.
Yeah. What's that thing? Paquito Moss?
Paquito Moss. Just a little more.
Yeah. I didn't know anything about Paquito Moss. I even thought that that was like just a standalone spot. And then I came to find it's a very famous chain. Yeah.
They have my favorite tostada salad. I love a chicken tostada salad. Oh, I mean, anything where you could eat the bowl that came in.
Yeah.
Hate doing dishes. I hate it.
I love eating the dishes.
Yeah. You want to like get rid of the evidence. Did someone eat here?
Not me.
Impossible. Not me. It wasn't There's me. Just a fork.
Got to figure out how to eat that too.
Mm. I also think of the big IKEA that's now there.
Oh, right. That big IKEA way, if you will. And when you like pull into that IKEA like driveway thing, it feels like you're on a runway, like you're about to take off.
It like, definitely feels like an airport, yeah.
Yeah, like your car is going to lift off
into a land of like Swedish Fantasia.
Right, exactly.
I've gone to that IKEA just for lunch. Speaking of great lunch,
the
cafeteria is really good. It's cheap too.
But you have to go through so much to get there. Like first, you have to park.
There's a shortcut.
Okay.
Well, you don't have to do the whole path on IKEA. There's like you just like right when you enter, you kind of just go up the escalator, take a right. It's fine.
Okay. All right. I'm here.
You
for
really
it.
Know who you're supposed to know, huh?
That's true about me.
I do miss, like, pre all this bullshit. I do miss, like, hanging out at the IKEA and getting, like, I'm serious. Like, getting the, like, soft serve at the end or the cinnamon bun thing. Even just smelling the air. It's nice.
Right? It's fun. Good. Also, it's just a great way to get your steps in. Definitely. But now this new IKEA, I feel like it does have more, but I feel like also it's not as cramped as the older one used to be.
Right, I agree.
So there's more space.
The new one is surely improved, yes.
Right. The old one is where they shot the Netflix game show, The Floor is Lava. That's where they shoot
that. No way.
A little fun. John and I used to go to the Chevy's across the street
all the time, yeah.
We do our Friday morning movies because, you know, when we were both unemployed.
Exactly.
We'd go to a Friday morning, like 11 a.m., see Justice League. And then John would sleep through most of it. And then
that's not true.
You'd sleep through 20 minutes.
I do fall asleep a lot in movie theaters.
I know exactly what movie theater you're talking about. I saw Girls Trip there.
Fun.
Oh, nice.
It was
Although
fun.
There's like
it was fun.
That in that area, there's three different AMCs three. In that
Right.
Little...
If you tell like a friend that you want to meet up for a movie in Burbank, you better get on the same page about exactly what
Pretty
address
quickly.
You're talking about. Yeah.
Speaking of getting on the same page, we're all here to discuss the same movie, which is Edward Scissorhands. John, what's the deal with Edward Scissorhands?
Mark, let me tell you the deal with Edward Scissorhands. It came out in 1990. It was directed by Tim Burton and written by Carolyn Thompson, based on a story that she and Tim Burton came up with together. It is a modern-day fairy tale which tells the story of Edward, a man created by an inventor who died before finishing him and left him with scissors where he should have had hands. One day, the local Avon representative calls at the mansion where Edward has been living alone. She takes him home to stay with her family, and soon he shows a talent in cutting hair and hedges and wins everybody's heart. But it turns out that life isn't always so sweet for Edward. Johnny Depp plays Edward Scissorhands. The movie also stars Winona Ryder, Diane Wiest, Anthony Michael Hall, Kathy Baker, Alan Arkin, and Vincent Price. It grossed over 4 times its $20 million budget and received general positive reviews from critics. Stan Winston and V. Neil were nominated for the Academy Award for Best Makeup. They unfortunately lost to Dick Tracy. But as you said, both Tim Burton and Danny Elfman consider Edward Scissorhands to be their most personal and favorite work. And that is the deal with Edward Scissorhands.
Wow.
Wonderful. Well, Lorraine, we asked you to pick a movie. Why Edward Scissorhands?
Well, for one thing, I love it. I mean, I've always loved this movie. I don't even remember, like, my first viewing of it because I think I watched it just too young. Mm. I don't know. Not too young, but just, like, too young to fully appreciate what I was looking at. I really enjoyed it. I'm really into the Tim Burton vibe. And I find myself reaching back for this Edward Scissorhands over the years. Like maybe, I don't know, once every, like 8 years. I don't know. I'll rewatch it. I will
Tell
rewatch
us,
this film.
Get it right.
Exactly 8.5 years. Rewatch this film. And I don't know, thinking about the project that this podcast is all about, I got really curious about what your perspectives were on this film. Like, what is the gay reading of Edward Scissorhands? I'm really looking forward to diving in and having a fun conversation with you both about it.
Wow. Well, aren't you the nicest person we've ever had on? John, what's your history with Edward Scissorhands?
I'm pretty sure I saw it when it came out, and I enjoyed it. It's a movie that, I've seen a handful of times. I wouldn't say like I like love it, but I do like it very much. And so I was like very excited to get to see it again. How about you, Mark? What's your history with Edward Scissorhands?
I love it. There was a time like after Batman, I was like a huge Tim Burton like nerd. But I guess I also did love Pee-wee and Beetlejuice just as much. I mean, he has like, in my mind, he has like a 4-5 great, because after this is Batman Returns, so I think it's safe to say he's got like a great run. I mean, his batting average has since dipped since then. But I hadn't watched this in a while, and I did really love it. The only part, like, for whatever reason though, like the ending is always just too much for me. It's like too like schmaltzy. And I think it maybe is because I don't care about the love relationship, the romance of it. But I do, I really love, I'm more invested in the relationship between Edward and Diane Wiest, the mother, like that relationship. And also, we spend more time with them. And I kind of don't care about like the girl as much. And she's also not very well.
I hear what you're saying. Because like every time that I rewatch it, I feel a similar thing. Like I feel like we're setting something up and then we like abandon it.
Right, because all those moms, I love the moms.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have to say, rewatching it again the other night, I was like, oh, it takes a while for Winona Ryder to show up. Like, I assumed she was there more present earlier on.
She's on a camping trip.
Yeah,
like
seems to last for a week though.
For like, a long ass time, and then she shows up, and we're like, oh right, she lives here. This is her house too.
Like, I think like they just wanted that scene where she catches him like in the waterbed or something. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we got to have that. So how do we write to that?
I feel like when I was rewatching it for this, that moment when Diane Wiest shows him the photos of her family, I remember seeing that when I was younger and thinking, oh, she must be at school. Like, she'll be home later today.
Right.
No, it takes forever for her to get home so that she can like be a part of this film.
That's true, but what a great photo. So as you know, Lorraine, we are, it sounds like you do know, we are looking for the gayest movie ever, and we have a complex and Byzantine scoring system with which to grade these movies. So we're going to go through a bunch of categories. At one point, you will add a category, and it will be added to the wheel. All right, so this is our current top five gayest movies ever. This is where they're standing, all right? Number five, with 78.59%, Bradley Cooper's A Star Is Born. Number four with 78.63%, Strictly Ballroom. Number three with 79.51%, Grease 2. Number two with 83%, Clue. And number one, gayest movie ever with a 94.83% is Female Trouble.
Fuck, 94%?
Yeah,
there isn't
a lot of boxes.
Yeah, John Waters, Divine, yeah.
Well, there's a big gap between Clue only has 83, and Female Trouble is 94. So there's like a 10-point gap there.
I love the attitude there, Mark. You're basically saying like, don't even try to come for Female Trouble. Like, there's no hope for you.
I mean, not for Edward Scissorhands, burst your bubble. But
well, let me just tell you this though. When I was looking at the films that you both had already done, I was like, oh, well, one of my favorite movies ever is Serial Mom. I'm so excited. Like, maybe it'll be that. And then I was like, oh, but they already did Female Trouble. I feel like if it's already been determined that of all of John Waters' films, that's the gayest movie. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not going to, like, try. Yeah, I'm going to leave. I'll leave that alone. Let's see what Tim Burton has to offer.
Let's see. Where do you... Well, we've done one other Tim Burton. We have covered Beetlejuice, and that currently has a 55.34 and is ranked 30th.
Okay, that's going to be the goal. I'm going to see if I can... Let's see. Let's see what happens.
You want to get over 55.34%.
And just like, okay. Just like first thought, I feel like Edward Scissorhands is a gayer movie than Beetlejuice. Just like, I'm just saying it. I'm not trying to like come for Beetlejuice, but like.
Please, you know. Don't say that name sorry, anymore. Yeah. He'll come for you.
He will come for you.
All right. Well, since you want us, a good thing we have a very elaborate scoring system to figure out exactly how much gayer it is, if it is at all. All right, let's get into it. These are the canon categories. Our first category is on actual gay characters. So we're all going to score on 0 to 100, then we take the average of all three. So ooh. Actual gay characters for Edward. I mean, I guess you could suppose... maybe Vincent Price.
Vincent
maybe.
Price,
perhaps he's reading an etiquette book,
right? And also, like, you really do have to like lean in and squint to decide that that's a gay character. You really like you almost right. have to project right. that onto him. So for right. me, I'm not gonna like try to inflate this score. I'll just stick with like 2%. You know,
two.
What are you giving 2%? What is your just because there's probably someone. Gay in the town.
Well, oh yeah, of course. Of course. Yeah, of course there are gay people in the town. I didn't know I didn't know we were talking about background.
John likes to.
Okay. I like to consider the whole world.
He likes to talk about things that aren't actually in the movie.
Okay, you know what?
You've never done that.
Take my two back. Don't put it in the sheet.
No problem.
Okay. God damn. All right. Can I say 15%?
You can say whatever you want.
Sure. 15, did you say?
I just didn't want anyone to think I was cheating, but now John opened up my mind.
If you've ever listened to the Tony Rodriguez episode, some of our guys have no shame.
Yeah.
Okay, 15%.
I mean, there is maybe a case to be made for like the metaphor of Edward, like a an outcast, someone who doesn't. I mean, what gay kid? I think a gay kid could definitely identify with Edward Scissorhands.
Yeah, I think that happens
living
a lot.
In the suburbs, you know. But unfortunately, he falls in love with Winona Ryder, which is kind of a rite of passage for gay men.
Right.
Yeah, and also Winona Ryder is the type of female who would date a lot of guys, who would be like a lot of guys' last girlfriend before they came out.
Ooh, I love that reading. I love that. Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Sure.
Okay, I also just want to say, like, a part of why I presume that the Vincent Price character is gay is because he was building up Edward to be a life companion for him. I mean, when he decides to create him, he holds up the heart cookie to a robot, you know? He wants to make a love friend in his life.
It does feel like he wants a companion. Like that's
you think
what he's,
right. this, he's making like a lover?
I don't know if it's lover, but I do think it's like companion.
I think it's
like
a manservant with benefits.
Right.
Where is that coming from? I hear what you're saying, but like...
I also think of it as like mentor-mentee relationship, like big brother, little brother. Like he's like, I'm going to make someone who's kind of like me and I'm going to teach him how to be. And like that seems sort of like, you know, older gay
guy
introducing gay stuff to young people.
Do you think... Am I reaching? Do you think Geppetto wanted to fuck Pinocchio?
Oh, maybe.
I think it depends on the production.
Sure. Yeah. That gave the Toro one? For sure.
All when right, Rockwell so... comes back, let's do one.
It they actually did Edward Scissorhands last year.
Wait, what?
They've done Edward Scissorhands before.
Oh my gosh, I wish I had seen. That's cool.
You can find it online.
Okay. That's exciting.
All right, so you want to give 15 for actual gay characters?
That's Lorraine's rating.
Awesome. John?
I'm going to go 25 because I do think the Vincent Price, I think his relationship with Edward contains multitudes. And I think part of it is like you have to think like they're alone, like up in that mansion together. Like there's like, I think he's creating this person who ticks off all of the boxes relationship wise, like whatever he needs him to be. I think Edward is going to be designed to be. So for that, I'm going to give a few extra points for Vincent Price.
I mean, you got to give points for Vincent Price. I'll give it 18. I'm going to kind of somewhat divide between the two. Get an average of 19.33. I mean, I do think Vincent Price reads as gay. Well, he was married to a woman. I think it was like a Lavender marriage. I could be speaking out of my ass. I don't know enough about the personal life of Vincent Price.
Hair in the film is gay.
He seems pretty gay to me. I know, like, he was married to a woman, but, like, they have a cookbook.
Who wasn't?
And, like, you know, he's Vincent Price. Like, there's something, I think there's,
he's definitely camp.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
All right, so give an average 19 point. Our next category, drag queen inspiration. Could a drag queen watch Edward Scissorhands and come away with a whole book of ideas?
I mean, if she doesn't, she's an idiot. Yeah.
I mean, even if you put Edward aside, all of the wigs that the women have.
These suburban mothers.
And also the Winona Ryder character, because, like, okay, so I looked this up and it was sort of like a joke, like, that she was this, like, bubbly blonde cheerleader type. That was sort of like a gag because, like, everybody, like, knows Winona Ryder for being, like, dark, gothic, whatever.
Beetlejuice.
And so, like, in a way, like, Winona was kind of, like, in cheerleader drag. And I think that that's, like, a cool, fun character that someone could be.
And that white dress at the end is pretty iconic.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. So, yeah.
With the red hair.
Totally.
Mm-hmm. Just every mother, and then also once they get their haircuts,
even the dogs, even like the a lot like Diane Weiss, drag.
Like her wardrobe is very like elevated.
Oh yeah,
one of the mothers at the end has like a Christmas tree dress. Did you notice
yes,
that? Like what's
of course.
Oh yeah, it's like a house coat, but it's like a Christmas.
It's
tree.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
I did think like this time, like, oh, Edward Scissorhands looks like a teenage Hellraiser. Like his outfit is like a he's like a Cenobite. It's like a cute little Cenobite.
Yeah. Okay, wait. This is another thing. The, like, shrubbery and the ice sculptures and stuff. Like, the way... Have either of you seen the movie Baps? Do you know it? Halle Berry?
I know it, but I haven't seen it.
Well, like, a big part of that movie is, like, the black hairstyles are, like, really over the top. And I was just, like, imagining a drag queen, like... doing hair like a like an Edward Scissorhands sculpture or something like that would be really fun. I like that.
No one talks about BAPS anymore. Now they're all talking about WAP. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's
the
today.
That's
how
current. That's mm-hmm. the kids of today. You could do like a fun reveal of like someone dressed as Edward cutting a shrubbery, and then
beneath
that shrubbery is a drag queen. You know what I mean?
I love it. That's cool.
I'm almost positive some drag queen must have done a take on Edward Scissor. I mean, that's
A ton. I mean, I did some Googling and there's a ton of like drag king performances, which I think also counts for this.
Oh, for sure.
For sure.
Cool.
Well, what do you want to give this for a drag queen inspiration?
Oh my God. I would give this, I say like 90. It's 90. Like there's so much to pull from. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm going to go 99. I think
99.
It's like right up there.
Awesome.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to go 100. I mean, if you're not watching.
Yeah. If you don't want to do something, if you want to elevate your wardrobe after watching Edward Scissorhands, there's something wrong
right?
with you.
It is sad. Mm-hmm. Like what's happened. It's like, see, you just watch this and go like, oh, CGI was the worst thing to ever happen to Tim Burton's movies. Cause it's like this one probably cost a third of what like Dumbo cost or whatever. And it looks a million times better and it doesn't look dated at all. It still looks amazing.
Yeah. The CGI, we can still tell that it's CGI. Like it's not that good yet.
Right. Like it's
except
all
for
very
Lieutenant
practical.
Stan's legs. Those look great. Or lack thereof. They get it. They did it.
I think that like when you go for like DIY aesthetic or like you just like really make all of your like cool visual stuff like live in front of the camera, that like makes it a little bit more timeless.
Feels so
like,
much more magical.
Yeah, it's cool.
All right, our next category, gay icons. How would you rate the gay icons of Edward Scissorhands? Who do we got? Well, Winona Ryder, Diane Wiest,
Vincent Price.
Not,
does he count?
Yeah, I would. Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
Okay, great.
Absolutely. I would also say Conchata Farrell. I've always loved her.
Which one is she?
She's one of the moms. She's the first ones who's like, I'm not going to buy anything.
And oh, that's the one with the rollers in her hair.
She's, she's been in. She was on like 2.5 Men, I guess, for like 10 years.
Oh, okay.
Kathy Baker. I always perk up when Conchata Farrell shows up. She's always great.
Okay. I'm like sort of illiterate when it comes to gay icons, which is so tragic. But like I love to just sort of like turn to other people and I'm like, is this an icon? Like there was this John
That's
was my director.
No. And yes it is.
I'm like, is that an icon?
Yes.
So like John was our director, was the director of my mod team. And like, there was this like sketch we were trying to figure out, or this bit anyway, where Kimya Bepornia was playing a character who was like struggling to come out or trying to find the right moment to come out. And she talks about her sexual awakening and like what we were like picking gay icons for that could have like stirred that up in her or something. And the writers chose Bette Midler or something. Or no, is that what it was?
I don't remember.
Oh God! We were saying like Bette Midler and like Hocus Pocus, and we're like, yes, okay. This was like a moment where I was learning. Yes, she's a gay icon, but that's not something that a lesbian would be excited about. Like at least right. as a child. And Kimya was like giving us great examples. She was like Lola Bunny, Jessica yeah. Rabbit. Like these right, are right, things. Yeah. Bette Midler's bosom in Hocus Pocus, not exactly.
Not one of them. No.
Oh, I don't know.
Kathy and Jimmy, maybe?
Oh, yeah. Maybe. I mean, she's... Oh, sorry. I just think she's funny. That's me going, yeah, pick her. Put she's her great. On the team. Yeah.
Right. I love my so Toyota Tundra truck. Mm-hmm. Is that a gay icon?
Anyway.
So what do you want to... What would you, a highly informed person, want to give gay icons, Lorraine, for Edward Scissorhands? You know.
20%?
20.
We're going to come back to you. I think,
I think yeah, you really missed the mark.
I don't know.
All right. So I think if you're talking like Mount Rushmore icon, I think I don't think we've got like one of the big, big ones here, but I do think Diane Wiest is a beloved gay, gay men love Diane Wiest, certain men of a certain age. And I think Winona Ryder is another one for a lot of I think for my husband, Winona Ryder is like a huge icon and like a major.
What about Vincent thing. Price?
I know we're getting to them, but I think Diane Wiest, Winona Ryder, and I think Vincent Price. I think all of them have real. I'm gonna give it 77.
77.
Oh my God! Wait, it really? Okay. Come back to me for sure. All right, go ahead, Mark. What's your story?
Well, where to begin? I don't know. I think this is pretty. Is this Shirley MacLaine? No, but is it is this a case where the three are greater than the sum of their parts? You know what I mean?
I think this is one of Diane Wiest's better, she's got, she has a career chock full of great performances, but I think there's something about this, her in this movie that very much speaks to gay.
The essence. Well, yes, it's because we all want a sweet mommy.
Yeah.
To love us unconditionally.
Who sells Avon beauty products.
Right.
So I don't know. I think if you're looking for a movie with gay icons, this definitely has a shitload.
I
named five, so I'm going to give it 100.
Okay. 100, wow. Okay. Thank you so much.
Well, because I think as compared to Terms of a Dream, which kind of has two, but I would say each of those are 50, while this is maybe a lot of 33s. You know what
I
mean?
Oh my gosh. Sure.
That's how I'm approaching it.
Okay. Also, can we talk for just one second about the status of Johnny Depp? Because I thought he would fit the category of gay icon in
No, it's okay. Well, keep talking.
This is the end of the episode. I have to go. No, I just kind of thought he was a teen idol heartthrob type, right?
Correct.
And I just thought that would make the list.
He's definitely there's some camp element to Johnny Depp, especially. Mm-hmm. I feel like this is where it all started to turn, where he's oh, I can hide behind makeup and a wig,
you know what I mean? And also Crybaby that same year.
Yeah, definitely. But
there's
definitely a camp element to Johnny Depp.
I don't think Johnny Depp has a performance that I think this is probably the most that gay men are oh, Johnny Depp in that.
Ooh, okay, well,
you know what I mean?
This is the moment. This is the movie. This is where he's,
right. He's delivering at his peak gay iconness. I would say probably in this movie. Would you say? What do you think, Mark?
I guess so. More than Captain Jack Sparrow.
I think so. Yes. Exactly. Exactly my point. Thank you.
I saw a quotation where he sort of made a comment to a Disney executive that all his characters are gay or something like that. Oh, don't you know?
No.
Okay. No. Anyway, whatever. It was a dumb joke. It was because like he was playing Jack Sparrow in a way where Disney people were like, "Are you being gay right now?" And he was like, "Oh yeah, always." You know, it was like that. Anyway, whatever.
Maybe Mordecai is his gayest because it's like the camp. It's the biggest bomb. It's like the campiest.
That's so funny.
That I, or maybe Dark Shadows. Was that Dark Shadows or was that?
I guess, but Mordecai's funnier. Okay. Just in terms of
it's hard.
Worst
yeah,
movie.
Dark Shadows. Okay. Yeah.
I mean, Mordecai is funnier because it's worse. Like, Dark Shadows is a better movie.
Well, can I just, like, pendulum swing and go, instead of saying 20%, can I say 80%?
You absolutely
sure can.
Okay, give an
great.
Average of 85.67, not as much as Mermaid, which has 90, also has Winona Ryder.
Yeah. Hmm.
All right.
But more than Silence of the Lambs, which only has 50.
Oh, did you guys know that there's a Backstreet Boy in this movie?
Yep,
I did. We all read the IMDb trivia.
Yeah, that was funny and weird. Listeners, just so you know, Nick Carter is a little boy on a slip and slide. That's pretty hot.
Something to look out for.
Yeah.
Speaking
of keeping an eye out for little boys, the male gaze. How horny is the camera for the male form?
Oh my gosh, so extremely horny in my humble opinion. Like, the whole movie is like about his body and how it moves, how it's like sort of like tall and dark and like it looms over you. It's like he's so broody and pouty, and he tries to say less with his mouth and more with his eyes. And speaking of his mouth, that scene at the barbecue when all the housewives are like spoonfuling, like putting like ambrosia salad and stuff in his mouth, like it's so erotic. So, yeah, I think that this movie is pretty consistently male gaze-y.
There's also Kathy Baker is also horny for the repairman.
Yes. And horny for Edward.
And what do we think about Anthony Michael Hall?
It took me a while when I remember first seeing this movie. It took a while being like, oh, shit, that's Anthony Michael Hall, because he totally beefed up.
He beefed up and turned into a real little shithead.
Yeah.
Is that the bully?
Yeah.
Oh my God, I love all the bully stuff, and like when Anthony Michael Hall and Edward like they like fight, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
They're like rolling around and stuff, like pretty exciting. Just gonna throw it out there.
I see what you're saying.
You're edgy.
Just some pinky shit there.
Oh yeah.
So what do you want to give this for the male gaze?
I mean, it could be more male gazey, but I understand why Tim Burton didn't do that. This is a conscious choice he was making as a director to keep all that stuff a little more understated. So this is not like a I don't know. I'm not trying to be negative or anything like that. I'm just being honest.
No. Please.
I'm going to keep it in that like 75% range.
75.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think it's that like horny for Johnny Depp. It's more like showing us that people are horny for him. So I'm going to go 65.
Mm.
65. I'm going to give it a 30 for male gay. I don't think it's that male gazy. I think Tim Burton is clearly straight, despite the production design.
Right.
But wait, let me ask you this, though, Mark. And I'm not trying to change your score. I'm just trying to ask you a
You can try.
I want to ask a little bit of a leading question.
Please.
I mean, don't you enjoy the sort of like the way that Tim Burton and the camera pull back so that if you want to, you can go there. You know, it's like, don't show me everything. I don't need to see like a bulge. I can imagine what's going on behind those buckles.
If he had shown me a bulge, its score would have been higher.
Okay. Thank you. That's the exact answer I was looking for. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Our next category, entrances with pizzazz.
Oh.
Now, Beetlejuice was the category this category came from. So, and its score did very well. This
entrances
is like a little less
pizzazz.
Like bombastic than Beetlejuice. This is more twinkly fairy tale.
Yeah. And even like Edward's first entrance is very sort of. I think I like how they do it, but it's not played for like maximum effect. It's like, oh, who's
right.
that guy in the corner? Oh, he's like slowly
scurrying
out.
But they build it
up
though. Like just her driving to the castle.
Right, and her going through.
There's
a
real
yes.
build to that though. I mean, actors would dream for that kind of build up.
But I wouldn't say it's like pizzazzy. Like, I wouldn't say it's like a ha-cha-cha. You know what I mean? Like, there's
not Beetlejuice exploding out of a coffin.
Exactly.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But she has a fun one with a Hello Avon calling. I think that was a trailer moment. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I remember that for the trailer. The castle itself, I was saying. The snow, the first time we see snow.
But it's like, is that an entrance? That's not really an entrance.
Yeah.
I mean, it enters the movie for the first time, maybe we could say.
Yeah, I guess. Mm. Yeah, it's like it's more like camera moves. It's like we're on a theme park ride, you know, navigating the space of the suburbs. And then it's like, oh, what's this mysterious cul-de-sac? Ooh, we're the ones entering with pizzazz. Right?
There you go. But taking the audience into, would you, maybe we could take that into account. Taking the audience into a new...
Sure. Yeah, I'm
but
really
character-wise, there's not like a great moment of like, boom, you know what I mean? And someone's silhouetted in a door frame, you know?
No, the only things that are really like eye-catching is like set design and stuff. Like when you like open on a room, you're like, oh my gosh, that accent piece is outrageous. Like it's not like people like moving through space with pizzazz. I don't really see that.
I stopped writing down all the things in like the decor, all the kitschy, the knickknack. I was like, I'll be doing this all day. It's like, I want to live in this world. It's so amazing.
And it's so cute. And you're like, where is this? And then IMDb tells you it's Florida. They're in Florida. Yeah.
Perfect. Cool. They did do a good job of like, also whenever they're in the suburbs themselves do feel very claustrophobic. Like the ceilings feel low. Yeah. The walls feel tight as opposed to the castle where everything's like expansive.
It's huge.
And like the fact that there's nothing but residential stuff. It's like there's nothing. There are no like stores or anything. The closest thing that you have is the bank, which is like all sterile and dry and like
literally
sad.
Just says bank outside it. Yeah.
Bank. And then also the
that
police,
one, like, strip mall.
Like, they're not, you don't go to like a police station. Yeah, exactly. It's like, there's like, oh, I guess this is a society.
I love whoever like was the suburbs there first and then the castle came and like or did the suburb pop up around the castle.
I think it's castle first.
Castle first, suburbs later. Classic rules.
Yeah.
Urban planning.
Like, they're like waiting to like have a developer come in, like demolish the castle. Yeah.
So what do you want to give this for entrances with pizzazz?
I want to make one more sort of slight case is that really when Winona Ryder and all the teenagers, when we first meet them, they literally drive up in a van, just stop in the middle of the street and all get out. So like, there's something very sort of almost like Grease about it. Like it's very much like,
whoa, here we are. We're the kids. We're the new
energy.
And
there are like flames on like spray painted onto the side of the van, which is like, you can't ignore that. Yeah. No. We're teens.
Nor should you.
No.
Yeah. That's it, though. So 15% from me.
15.
Yeah.
A brutal score from Lorraine.
I'm going to give it a 45.
45.
What? You guys are grading this like you're like American educators or something. Like,
well,
like
we like
I'm
to think
grading,
of ourselves that way.
I'm grading it like I'm a mean French teacher. That's
you're
like,
taking
try
from
harder.
Like a C is a decent grade as opposed to like a C feels disappointing. Gotcha.
Yeah. It's like if you want an A, work for it. But also A's don't exist because perfection is something that we should all be striving for, you know?
Yes. Perfection's a moving target.
Wow.
I'm going to give it a 40 for entrances with pizzazz. This is no Beetlejuice.
Okay.
All right, next category, strident women.
I think there's a few, like quite a few.
That weird religious lady who I love.
Esmeralda. She's the most. But I think all the women are strident. They're all very much like, tell us this, tell us that. And also, the woman at the talk show who after they're like, oh, do you want to get it fixed? She's like, if you get an operation, no one will care about you. No one will ever want to talk to you or think you're interesting or like, it was just like, calm down, lady. I think the women in this, with the exception of Diane Wiest and Winona Ryder, are pretty strident.
Well, Winona Ryder tells Glenn off at the end.
Oh, yeah.
I also love the girl who won't accept a slice of pot roast from Edward because she's like, it's unhygienic. I think she made me laugh.
That's super funny. Oh my God, that's hilarious. I forgot about that girl.
I love
They like hold the camera on her for too long. Like she's like stammering. She's like, his hands touch and... It's not sanitary. It's unsanitary, in fact. And I cannot accept. It goes on for so long. It's great.
I love her.
Anyway, I love her.
I mean, his scissors would be covered in oil, wouldn't they be?
It's disgusting.
Probably.
Right?
I would not accept. And when with the shish kebab part where he at the barbecue, I'm like, what is happening? Like the men asked him to do it. That's so gross. Right? I'm on the side of that stammering teenager.
It wasn't for a sight gag. I don't care. You know what I mean? The reality of the sight gag is too upsetting.
Yeah, the movie was too grounded to get away with a sight gag like that.
So what do you want to give this for? The problem with the moms, though, and like the movie calls it out, is like they're all like stick up. But as soon as those husbands come home, when all the cars pull in at the same time,
they
all run home.
It's true. But I feel like that's a part of their like, I don't think that negates their personalities. I think
that's
true. It's just like, yep, this is my, like, clocking in. I'm a housewife.
Right.
And they can't wait to get back on that phone gossiping. You know, like, they're just doing what they need to do to get to the next moment in their busybody lives.
Exactly. So
what do we want to give this for strident women?
80%.
80.
I'm going to go 90.
90.
Yeah.
I think I'm also going to go 80. Given an average of 83.33. Pretty good. Not as good as Mermaids, which got an 84.33.
Ooh.
All right, next category. Macabre. How macabre is Edward Scissorhands?
100%, baby. We don't even need to discuss it.
I would love if we could, though.
All right, I guess that is the point of a podcast, huh? All right,
there's that Christian neighbor. She's pretty.
Yeah,
to me, she's the most upsetting, scary part. Maybe because I've read too much Stephen King, where it's always the religious zealots who are the scariest people.
Yeah, I found it kind of interesting because, like, okay, I was thinking, like, from her point of view, a creature like Edward is ungodly. It's so bad. Like, it's for sinners. I don't know. Like, he's going to hell. But for us, she's the villain. Like, we're like, shut the fuck up. Like, this movie is all about him. Like, what number are you on the call sheet? Get the fuck out of here, you know? So I thought that was kind of interesting that, like, in this world, like, good means bad and bad means good. Like, she's a Christian, so we're supposed to, like, do you know what I'm trying to say right now?
Right.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes.
This is an anti-Christian movie is what you're saying.
Yes. And I love that about this film. That's what I'm saying.
This doesn't feel like a horror, scary, dark. It feels more like fairy tale, like a Brothers Grimm story kind of macabre.
Mm-hmm.
It feels more like fanciful. It's not like a heavy, dark. I wouldn't call it a dark movie by any means. But there is like, he does look like a goth. You know, he's like my child's first goth.
Right. And like the dark themes, like with that contrast of light and dark, that like
and
makes
having scissor hands,
so,
pretty macabre.
Right.
That's pretty macabre. Right. I think even the take on suburbia is macabre. You know what I mean? The weird color scheme, the sort of uniformity, like I think it's all there.
It's kind of grotesque.
Yeah, it's haunting.
Also, you know, again, Vincent Price is in it. Like
Vincent
he just
Price.
Is macabre.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think like that, like Tim Burton loves like a needlessly complex machine that like makes food, like that
I
weird
love
thing that they have
right?
that makes the cookies. It was like, oh, this is like Pee Wee's Playhouse with the breakfast thing, you know, like he just loves those sort of very, very macabre machinery.
And it was like chopping up the veggies too. And it's sort of like saying everything that's going on in those little tiny pastel houses down there. It's the same thing here. We're all doing the same stuff. We just have a different method of doing it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was really cute.
So what do you want to give this for, macabre?
I said what I said. 100.
100?
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to go 99.
99. I'm going to go 75. It's spooky. Like I said, it's just more fairy tale macabre. It doesn't feel like truly like macabre.
I see you, Mark. You don't have to explain. Okay. I get it. I know what you're going for. Mm-hmm.
What am I going for? I don't know.
You're
going for
like your definition of macabre is like I can't even pronounce that. I was like letting you say it. I was trying to avoid saying it. Macabre.
That's it.
You nailed it.
Your definition is more like actually literally dark. Like gives you the horror chill feeling.
I think so. Like kind of more like death focused. Like Edward Scissorhands isn't really a movie you want to associate with like death or any, you know?
For me, it's like the darkness of that theme. Like like John was saying in the beginning, how this story is based on like a very personal, dark feeling that Tim Burton was carrying with him. So sad to me. The feeling of like, I want comfort and closeness and company, but I feel like such a reject. I can't reach out. I can't have it. And so like the idea of this hugging with scissor hands is like such an impossible thing to like achieve. It's something he's like going for and he's like searching for. That's so dark and sad to me. And that is macabre for me, you know?
I get it.
Anyway.
No, you're right.
I didn't go to film school. I just watch movies. So I'm no one. I'm just somebody who sits in a chair.
That's all they do in film school is watch movies, let me tell you.
Is it? And posture, just all day?
A lot of posture. Yeah. A lot of sitting up straight. All right, our next category, speaking of film school, dramatic lighting. How dramatic is the lighting in Edward Scissorhands?
I love the lighting. I love it so
much.
Pretty great. Especially when Peg Boggs first walks into that house. It's like all light and pretty outside and it's dark inside. And there's this like sunshine, like just like
shafts of light, just sort of,
so cool. I love it. What do you two think?
I agree. I think there's a lot, I mean, there's a lot of it where it's just bright, like it's, and that's sort of like the point of it is this sort of like, you know, this sort of like very normal. And I feel like the stuff in there in the, at the mansion is like the most like sort of like cause attention to itself, dramatic lighting. But I also just think the lighting's really beautiful. Like when he makes snow, I think like that's a whole like very beautiful effect.
There was one shot that stuck out to me is, and it is one of the outdoor ones, is when like Kathy Baker sits down to get her haircut and like the camera's pointed up and everything is just like super saturated. Almost looks like a David LaChapelle like photo shoot. It just looks like, and it's so hard to make outside look stylish just using natural lighting, but they did it and it looks great. Just the opening credits alone are just like, just seeing bits of the castle and all the machinery and stuff. It's, I mean, Tim Burton in the late 80s, early 90s, it's hard to beat.
Yeah, it's pretty good. So how good is the lighting? I mean, I loved it. I can't do that stuff. I told you I didn't go to film school. So I'm just going to say, like, this Rube over here, I give that 100%.
100.
I'm going to give it 85.
I'm going to go 88. I think it's pretty dramatic. Give it an average of 91, which is more than Terms of Endearment, only has 44.33.
Okay.
All right. Our next category, vibrato.
So for vibrato, in addition to the literal meaning of vibrato, I mean anytime the movie gives you something extra, they take a moment and they zhuzh it up or do more with it and you like it. I would say pretty much everything Tim Burton touches is vibrato. You know what I mean? Like the manicured lawns or so, the way that like the people's like clothing matches their house, matches like the grass.
There's a heightened sense of reality to everything.
All the outfits, the haircuts, the shrubs, like all of it. Like it's just so, like even his hands, like in a way it's sort of absurd because it's like, in before we get you your human hands, we have this even more complex machine to put on the edge of your arms, which is a
no,
perfect
he had
substitute.
The scissor hands first because he had the lettuce thinking robot first and then he took that lettuce chopping robot to make him human.
Oh, okay, I see.
Oh, right.
It still seems like the substitute is more complex than the actual thing.
Right. It's sort of like, why did he wait, though? You know, it's like if he was going to replace like the head and the body part and there's that sort of like Pygmalion scene where we talked about this, where Vincent Price sits him down and is like reading him poetry and teaching him how to take tea and stuff. Edward doesn't have legs yet. It's just his torso sitting on a ledge. And so it's like he's finished from the waist up. And so it's like weird that he has hands, like scissor hands. That's just weird.
Right.
But
I was
whatever.
Thinking this time after, because we had just a month ago now at this point, we talked about Alien Covenant, which is another movie, John's favorite, obsessed with like creators creating things that then go on to create themselves, which is what Edwards does. He's a creator. Like he uses what others see as like a deformity to like create. And like, because that's what does he know? He knows his father was a creator. Right. So he kind of wants to emulate that. And I think that's like very sweet. And like, could he do that if he had regular hands?
Oh, that's so cool. Mm. Oh, that's really, really cool. And then the other thing I was going to say, I really appreciated the like, it's not just pastel houses, it's also pastel cars. And the cars, like, I don't know anything about cars, but like, those are real cars that you buy from a manufacturer, but like, there's no branding on the cars. Like, they've painted completely over it. Like, it looks ridiculous, but beautiful. And like, yeah, that's like a little something extra that I appreciated. They like had to paint all those cars to match the houses.
I guess I found the four different, there's four different paint colors, and the production designer Bo Welch described them as seafoam green, dirty flesh, butter, and dirty blue.
Okay.
That's so funny. Yeah. I don't know. This is a hard one for me because it's sort of like intangible, this question. Not to say that all the other questions are so tangible, but like on this one, I'm like, what? A little something extra. I don't know.
I mean, I think it's going to be pretty high.
Yeah.
I think even like that machine that they use to make cookies. Great. It's like, all that's to me, honestly, I'll go first if you want. I'm going to say 100. I think literally there's not a moment in this movie that Tim Burton, there's certainly no major element that Tim Burton isn't like, well, let's make it weird. Let's heighten it. Let's take what is unique about it, or, you know, or like, let's exaggerate something about it to elevate it to this other place. So I think, for me, it's 100 for vibrato.
I just feel like we so rarely get movies like maybe some Guillermo del Toro or even like Wes Anderson, like what movies that really take you to a place that doesn't exist in the real world, which I think
but you
is
feel.
So fun.
But when you see them, you're like, oh, this is a like it feels like it exists.
Yeah, yes. It takes you to a different world.
Yes, and like I was reluctant to say this because it sounds so like hacky and stupid, but like I really connected and related to this movie because it's so like it reminds me so much of where I grew up. But like it's not that doesn't make any sense. Like, if I told you about where I grew up, you would be like, this place is not like that. But it's the feeling of it. Like, the feeling of, like, there's a certain way to be normal, and there's a certain way to be perfect and, like, preppy or, like, whatever. And then if you're not that, if you're anything else, you don't match. Like, you don't belong here. You're weird. So either...
And their version of normal is so freaky and weird.
Yes, exactly. I grew up in Maryland, so that's what I'm saying. Yeah, it's weird. They all, like, everybody there, like, the part of Maryland that I mostly grew up in is so, like, do you guys know what Lilly Pulitzer is? Do you know that brand, Lilly Pulitzer?
No.
It's like, if I showed it to you, you'd be like, oh, I've seen that shit. Do you know about, like Vera Bradley bags? Do you know what those things are? Mm-hmm. It all, like, all of the prints look like that. And it's very busy and loud and, like, and there's, like, it's very expensive also. So, anyway, there's, like, a very specific style. And, like, it's expensive. It's hard to keep up. And also, it's so impractical. It's very busy. It's, like, no one can dress like that. And I always felt like that. I was, like, there must be something so wrong with me because I don't dress like that. And then I, like, moved to New York and I was, like, oh, I'm fine. I can just, like, wear black and be fine. Anyway. Right? This movie stirs that up, and like I think that that's really cool that it can do that, you know.
Totally.
Anyway,
so what do you want to give it for vibrato?
100. I'm copying John.
I'm also giving it 100, giving it an average of 100.
Yay!
All right, our next category: footwork. How would you rank the footwork in Edward Scissorhands?
Footwork.
There's like the one thing that I noticed. I was like, you're just like a like camera angles or movements, stuff like that. There's that scene where Johnny Depp is trying to put on pants without using his hands because he's got scissor hands.
And
he has to jiggle and jimmy around. So there's some fun footwork there.
Yeah, and he shuffles throughout the film. Like when he's trying to get out of trouble, he's like shuffle, shuffle, shuffle.
Yeah, he does sort of walk almost as if like his feet are bound together in some way.
Yeah, and like when he runs with scissors, he's like he like opens up his arms like he like it's a Jesus cross kind of and runs like that. Like he doesn't like do this.
He doesn't. He wants to keep them away from him in case he trips. He doesn't want to fall on himself.
This is how you run with scissors. Anyone?
It's like he just put polish on his scissors, nail polish on his scissors that he's running and hoping they will dry.
Exactly.
He's dainty.
Yeah.
And there's Winona's classic spinning through the snow.
It's lovely. Footwork.
I keep going back to that machine, those feet that make the thing move.
Oh, yeah.
In that cookie cutters.
Stomp the cookies.
I like that.
They have the cookie cutter feet up in the castle in the suburbs. They all have one of four cars. So who's the real freak?
Right. Also, all the housewives like shuffling like from house to house and place to place. Mm-hmm. There's like
a
lot
gaggle
of
housewives.
Yes, they are very much like geese. Footwork. I don't know. I'm just going to like, I'll keep it. There's like 65%.
65.
I'm going to go 50 for this one.
50. I'm going to go 35. Give him an average of 50 right down the board.
Alrighty.
All right. Next category, animal print. How would
I didn't
write the animal
see a
print?
Lot of animal print.
I would think Kathy Baker would have some, but I didn't see
any. I didn't see any. The one thing that I saw.
Mind, but...
Right.
The one thing that I saw, which is not a bullseye, but something. One of the, I noticed at the very end when they were going all go like as an angry mob going up to the mansion. One of the woman's haircut was a swan.
Oh,
like her
that's
hair
cool.
was a swan.
That's cool.
That was her hairstyle.
Say 100, but it's not a zero.
Exactly.
Maybe.
Right.
I'm just
I mean,
trying to throw a few points in there for it.
There's also something about the dog haircuts. There's something about that. That's not an animal.
That's true. There
print,
was like a
like,
pattern.
The one
on
dog
an
turns
animal.
Into a lion.
Right. It's right. True.
The dog
right.
gets turned into a lion. There's something there.
That poodle mm-hmm. is a very specific sort of pattern of print, one might say.
Right.
One might.
One might. Again, it's not 100. You know,
it's
no,
not.
This is not 100.
I'll just kind of keep it low on this one. I'll go back to that like 10% because there I did 10. Not see animal print. Yeah.
No.
I'll go 15.
15. Uh-huh. I'm going to go 9. Give it an average of 11.33. All right. This is the last of the canon categories. On a scale of 0 to 100, how likely are you to recommend this to a gay person?
I mean... How likely am I? What? Like, should I, like, yeah. rush up to a gay person, stop everything
no,
you're
no,
doing?
No, not that. Imagine, like, you're
I mean, you
hanging
should
out.
Do that.
You should, yes. Or maybe you should.
What are you doing?
That's 100. Imagine you're hanging out with, say, like, I don't know, like, Oscar Montoya, and he, and this okay. movie comes up, and he goes, oh, I've never seen it before.
Yes, I would recommend. I would be like, okay. whoa, something's wrong. You haven't seen this? I would love for you to see this and tell me what you think about it. Yeah. So okay. I guess that's 100.
100.
Yeah.
I think it's pretty high for me as well. I think, although I do know some gay people who don't like this movie. They're not big fans of Tim Burton, so they think his work can be a little flat, which I kind of get sometimes. But I'll give it, I do think it's like, it's a very, it's beautiful, fun movie to watch. It's, I think it holds up. It's a very sweet movie. I think Diane Weiss's performance is definitely like iconic and great. So I'm going to say 94.
94. Okay.
Cool.
I'm gonna give it a 75 because it does kind of like for me it does kind of fall apart. It's just too treacly, just the whole like I still dance in the snow. I'm just like shut up. I just hate that. It's like it's too much.
That is a little. I totally get
it's
that.
It's too corny from at the end. I'm like no, you had it, and then it all fell apart.
I'm curious, is how do you feel about the fact that Anthony Michael Hall's character dies at the end? Like I know there's some criticism that it's like oh it takes it
too
out
dark.
Of fairy tale realm and it becomes sort of too dark, but in a way that maybe doesn't earn. I don't know. I remember for watching it again, I was like oh I'd like forgotten that that's what happened to him, like that he got his comeuppance in such an intense way. I'm just curious if that's part of what you don't like about the end of it. It feels like the last third of the movie is where, for you, it sort of like loses it, a lot of its
It's mostly
will.
Just the whole snow and like telling a little girl and a thing and then that she still danced. It's literally like the
it's
romance
very over,
angle.
Yeah. If they took out the, I don't think they needed the framing device with old Winona Ryder.
Right.
So what I heard was Mark Rennie's all good with the jock being murdered.
I am good with it. It's all very, because that cool. seems like straight out of a, that's like, you know, Gaston and Beauty and the Beast. Though.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm just trying to think like, what else could you do with him? It would only make the ending even more corny. So like,
I guess like
dead.
The Beauty and the Beast, like, I guess Beauty and the Beast, the difference, like Gaston purely dies through his own doing.
Mm-hmm.
And right. while this one, Edward Scissorhands like kind of gives him a little nudge.
Yeah. But like it was really like either him or him, you know? It
right,
was,
and he was
yeah.
going to try to kill Winona. He's like already beat her
totally.
Up a few times.
Totally, and like mm-hmm. I agree with you. Like that Gaston Beauty and the Beast like comparison is very astute. Like yes, this is right. a Beauty and the Beast tale.
They map
sure.
very well. Yes.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. 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 Yes.
Although in this, it would be if the Beast though did not transform and then like stayed right. in his castle, and then Belle was later talking to her daughter.
Right.
Her granddaughter.
And also just everyone took Belle's word that the beast had died. Like,
yeah.
Well, if she held up like his dead paw, they'd be like, oh yeah, that beast is dead.
But like in at the end of Edward Scissorhands, I was like dubious of everything at that moment because I was like, wait a second. I'm like, so the town is basically confirming right now that all they care about is gossip. All they actually care about is like absolutely. Getting the scoop. And they were like, oh, he's dead now? More ambrosia salad for me. And they just kind of bounced. They didn't investigate anything. The cops were not interested. They left the jock body just laying there.
Right.
It was kind of, yeah, that was a little weird, but it's okay. I didn't need it to be completely cleaned up at the end for me.
Fair enough. All right. Now we are into the wheel category.
So these are all categories that previous guests have brought in. We've put them all on a wheel. And so I'm going to spin it a couple times. And then whatever category comes up, we're going to apply that category to the movie.
Okay.
And after we do four times, and then you are going to add a category. So get ready.
Ooh, okay.
Go.
She's got paper. She's got notes. She's getting prepared.
Okay. Is anyone on fire?
A literal or flaming gay, I think is what the category is, right? There's not one. I mean, Vincent Price, but he's pretty
has that well gone dry? Should I dip into the Vincent Price right well ahead. Again?
I think that's the only well you have in this movie.
Yeah. No one else is on fire and no one else is like in my face being gay. So, all right.
Alan Arkin is very funny in this though.
Oh my gosh. So funny.
Just unflappable the entire movie.
So am I allowed to say the word yes? Cause isn't that the question? Is like, is anybody,
no, we're still doing 0 to 100.
0 to 100.
Oh, 0 to 100. 15.
15.
Yeah, I'll give it 15 as well.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm going to go 9 because even though it's Vincent Price, he's not really doing much mincing.
True. Okay.
I believe Literal Flaming Gay is from Female Trouble episode with Frank Tapia.
Too cool under pressure.
Too cool under pressure.
What does that even mean? Please
so
help
like
me.
Does a character like know they're in trouble but act like too cool or like try to like keep a lid on it for too
long? Oh, that's funny.
I think you could say Diane Weiss when she first goes to like when she first encounters Edward, excuse me.
Right.
You know, like she's very much like, oh, everything's fine, everything's okay.
I see that.
But don't you think she believes that though? I think she believes everything is fine and everything's okay.
Well, what she says is she's like, I see that I've disturbed you. I'm going to go now. And she's like backing away and he's like, please don't go. And then she relaxes. Mm-hmm. So she's at first, I think she fears for her life when she sees those blades for the first time.
Edward himself, though, you could say, keeps things way too cool.
Yes,
barely emotes.
Well.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But he's a cyclone of emotion underneath that leather fetish wear.
And yeah, he like knows that he's in trouble a bunch of times. Like the biggest moment is when he's kind of like there's like an angry mob around him. And Winona Ryder is like, you need to run. Like, you need to go. Mm-hmm. He sort of, like, waits a beat. He's there for, like, kind of longer than I think a normal person would be. You know? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what do you want to give this for too cool under pressure?
This is honestly kind of a hard one. But I'm going to give it, like 60%.
60.
Yeah, I was going to say 65.
65. I mean, yeah, it is pretty much Edward, right? I'll give it a 70. What the hell? Because that's Edward Scissorhands for you.
Yeah.
Give an average of 65. I don't remember where Too Cool Under Pressure was from. I forget. I'm so bad at this. John.
You're actually, no, you're very good at this. Like, don't even trip.
Thank you.
The next one, here we go, is wearing another's clothes.
Ooh, this is a good
movie.
Well,
Edward wears the dad's clothes.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. That's a really big part of the movie. And I mean, we could also say he's a robot wearing human clothes. I'm reaching. I'll admit it.
It's okay.
I have to calm down. And Winona is not really wearing her clothes. She's wearing like I'm trying to think. I'm like, who's a blonde like star from that? I'm like, Doris Day.
Kim Basinger? That's
not. Yeah, Tori Spelling. She's wearing Tori Spelling's clothes in this film.
Is that just a costume she was assigned for the role?
Right, but it's like, where do you get off? Like, how dare you?
How that dare you?
Like, yeah.
If you saw Winona Ryder, would you just go up to her and go, liar?
Yes, absolutely.
Just tear off her clothes. Like, this is
this isn't you.
And she would start screaming and crying, I've been found out. I've been found out. It's good. It would be such a scene.
Such a scene.
Wearing other people's clothes. What is it again?
Wearing another's clothes. Which is like thematic though for Edward, because he wears the fall, and like as the movie goes on, those clothes start to get more torn up and damaged, because like he can't fit in there.
Right.
He doesn't belong there.
Also, okay, here are a couple other things. One, Winona Ryder, a young person being aged up to play like Grandma Winona Ryder, that's wearing another's clothes. And oh my gosh, there's so much. Okay, there's the moment when Peggy Boggs or whatever puts the makeup on top of Edward's face.
Yeah.
So that's like wearing another face clothes. And then the other thing is the art and style that Edward brings to the town. Like, he brings those haircuts to them. He brings the like asymmetrical everything, like the looks that those housewives suddenly take on. That's not theirs. That's not their eye. That's Edward. And their manicured lawns suddenly like look like a fucking like Huntington Gardens Getty Villa masterpiece. That's not them. That's him. So
I wish the Getty Villa had T-Rex topiaries.
Me too. Maybe after all this is over, that's the new look. You know, like everything. What I've been saying about this time is that like coronavirus, civil unrest, needing to get Trump out of office, all of this time, I feel like we were all inside of a great big messy purse. And then God just flipped it upside down and just dumped us out. It's like crumpled receipts, like half unwrapped Werther's, too many like cards from coffee shops, like with the hole punches. Right. Like it's just a
two
mess.
Dozen paper clips for whatever reason. Yeah,
that is what this is. And I'm really curious to see like, what are we going to look like? Are we going to go back into the same bag? Are we going to be in different clutches? Like,
so
are
Toy
we gonna...
Story.
Right. That's how I feel. Anyway, maybe the Getty Villa will take on a new look after all this is over. Wearing another's clothes, 98%.
98.
I'm going to give it 75.
That's what I was going to give it. And M, giving it an average of 82.67.
Not half bad.
Not half bad. Wearing another's clothes is from the movie Titanic and guest Heather Ann Campbell.
Oh, here you go. Gossip.
I mean,
yeah,
that fuels this neighborhood.
That's all it is.
I feel like I learned what gossip was because of this movie. No lie.
You obviously haven't heard Lady Gaga's song Babylon. She goes through the whole song. Every other chorus is, that's gossip. So she lets you know. You got to listen to it. Last song on Chromatica.
Okay. I'll definitely listen as soon as this record is done. But like, for real, like, I think that I was like a little kid watching it and like seeing all these like bored women like on the phone and rushing up to each other. Did you see so-and-so with so-and-so? And I'm like, what is this activity? What am I observing? And like, that's gossip. And I love gossip. I really do. There's a lot of it. 100%. Like, the whole movie is like, he said, she said, she said, she said, you know, it's gossip.
Yeah. I 100 as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you gotta go 100. Wow. I'm giving it 100 as well. These wheel categories were really good for you.
Yes.
All right. Lorraine, speaking of being good for you, it is now your turn. Your turn? It is now your time to add a category to the wheel for which we will potentially judge any future movie to figure out how gay it is. So what are you thinking?
I have a couple of options. So I'm just going to like say one. And if you accept it, we're done. But if you hate it, then I'll do another one.
Okay.
Does a high school jock get penetrated?
You got a gasp out of me.
Thank God you weren't drinking anything.
I love it.
Okay, we're done.
Okay. So how do we articulate that?
What do you mean? It's like, does
a high school jock penetrate?
Is in the film, is there a high school jock and does he get penetrated?
That's pretty gay.
Yeah, okay. And I say Edward Scissorhands 100%. We watched it happen. He got penetrated by a scissor. We're clear on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Absolutely.
We all saw the movie. Sure. So you're saying 100?
100.
Okay. Here's my thinking. For me, when you say penetrated, I feel like he's getting pegged, like someone's fucking him up the ass. That is what my heart,
that's where my
brain
goes. That's why
it's a scale, John. So dirty.
But I think the scissor But I think like the scissor sort of works thematically and it sort of works on this other level. So I'm going to give it a 95.
I can live with that.
All that for a 95. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give it an 80 because 100 would be an actual dick in an ass. So it got to have somewhere to go. Given an average of 91.67. All right. Now we are into the bonus categories.
Right. So these categories, they would just be a percentage bonus. So we're going to give 0 to 10. So if it doesn't score well, it's okay. It doesn't penalize the score in any way, but we just get extra points for this. So again, it's from 0 to 10.
All right. The first bonus category on a scale of 0 to 10%. How would you rate Edward Scissorhands in Makeover Montage?
I think it was pretty high because there's all the haircuts. Like there's a montage of all these women getting these haircuts.
Makeovers.
Yeah. 0 to 10%, you said?
Yes.
Okay. 9.5.
People love adding decimals when it's a percentage.
I don't know why. Yeah.
I'll go 9.5 as well.
9.5. I'm gonna give it an 8. It would be higher if it wasn't just the hair.
Fair. I understand.
I need a full head to toe.
Hold up. But you're not counting. I'm sorry, but you're not counting the whole makeover that is Edward Scissorhands going from like hard, dark goth boy to soft boy in trousers. And
that's right. I'm not counting that.
You're not. Okay. Because that's not a montage.
It's not a montage. Yeah.
Okay. I'm glad I asked.
Me too. Thank you. Giving it a 9%. That's pretty great. All right, the next category, cheerworthy cameos. Well, there's Nick Carter.
Got Nick Carter. And also, yeah. I got excited for John Davidson.
Me too. That's incredible, John.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's something.
John Davidson was.
I have no idea who we're talking about.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay.
When they go on the talk show, he's the host of the talk show.
Oh, that's fun. That's really cool.
I guess it was like a syndicated show called That's Incredible.
Yeah, he's someone I think he like hosted like a season or two of like Hollywood Squares. Like he's just one of those like guys who's like around
the
70s and 80s.
And Lee Crosby, Fran Tarkenton were the other two co-hosts on That's Incredible.
Right, yeah.
People would come in like, I collected a bunch of soda cans.
Yeah.
Or someone who could like do a world record for yo-yos.
Yeah.
Look. TV this is was a very different landscape.
You're speaking a language that I do not know. I'm like, yes, I remember.
It was kind of like a highbrow gong show in a way.
Oh, I still don't know.
It's okay. All right, great.
Yeah, you helped her with an older reference.
Here's something more obscure.
You remember the show What's My Line? It's like that.
Okay, so I kind of just like can't even appreciate the cameos in this movie as being cameos other than the Nick Carter thing. Because like in an email, John, you sort of referenced the Vincent Price thing as being a cameo. Does that count?
He's not. Unfortunately, in my memory at first, before we rewatched the movie, I thought that all the Vincent Price stuff happened at once.
I forgot
that it was broken up. So that anytime someone is in like more than one section, we tend to think of that as more than a cameo. Like a cameo should be very self-contained.
What shot is really like stuck with me from the shot of when Vince Price dies, like his face, how his face transforms. Like, it's so moving. Like this, that, I don't know.
It's like what really good acting.
He's a really good actor.
He's a very good actor.
Yeah.
He's very good.
Gosh. I mean, I guess then I'll just kind of say like 6. I don't feel very strongly.
What are you giving the 6 for? For the Nick Carter on the slip
and slide? For the Nick Carter and then also the banter that you two just had. I was like, oh, there's something in there. So I'm going to give myself some more points.
Fair enough.
Do it. I'm going to go 8.
8?
Yeah. I was real excited when I saw John Davidson.
I'm giving it a 2.
2?
John Davidson. I mean, it's like, oh, that's John Davidson. Okay. You know what I mean? It wasn't like,
what did you, that's, yeah, cheer-worthy cameo. Oh, look who's here.
Oh, I don't know. It just wasn't that, I don't know. It wasn't that cheer-worthy to me. It was like, it wasn't, there wasn't enough.
Okay, hold on. Before we move on, is there a cheer-worthy cameo of note that you're like, that's a cheer-worthy cameo?
What is a cheer-worthy cameo of note?
That's a good question. Elizabeth Taylor and Flintstones 2.
Flintstones 1, thank you.
Oh, sorry. Excuse
me. I love it. That's, yeah, great.
There you go. Okay. All right, next category, pool trouble.
What do we mean?
Like, trouble in a pool.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I guess the waterbed counts as trouble in a pool for me.
I guess so.
There you go. Yeah, you get some points for that.
Very good, Lorraine.
Nice. You're learning how to play the game.
Yeah. I don't remember if there, I don't think that there
you
really
would think
were,
there
like,
would be
pools.
A swimming pool in this, like,
yeah,
suburb,
it's like Bourbon,
you know?
Right. Shot in Florida. Florida. Like, what's up with that? I feel
like
they're
like above ground pools.
Yeah, it's almost like they were avoiding pools. They're like, production can't
insurance.
Handle it.
Yeah, too much for the insurance.
We can't afford it with those scissors.
We can do robots that are like stop motion, like cookie cutting things. But pools, especially above ground, don't.
No,
please miss me with those pools. That's the real pool trouble. Is the lack of.
That's if there's only a pool, his salon would be open and running today.
Yes. Oh yeah, there's like a shampoo bowl that we never see the water, but we could imagine how nice that would be.
That's trouble.
And all the trouble that would come.
Also, I enjoyed something.
Imagine all those ice sculptures in humid
the
ass
next
Florida
morning.
Right after they wrap pool trouble, if you ask me. Oh man, I don't know.
And we are asking you.
All right. I'm gonna stop dicking around and I'm gonna say five. The waterbed is like the most pool trouble I can think
for
of.
For sure.
I'll give it a 3 for the waterbed because it is like a scene you remember.
Mm. I'm also gonna give it a 3.
Okay.
Give it an average of 42, a points value of 42.55. All right, next category. How witchy is Edward Scissorhands?
I would argue that it's very witchy.
It's very witchy. Esmeralda, even though, you know, she's Catholic, but she has a very witchy energy.
She's like a Christian witch.
Yeah, Christian witch. And I think even like all the local women, like they act like a coven of, you know what I mean? Like the way they're all just like come together and who is this person? And da, da, da. So
well, there's also
witchy.
Something witchy about Vincent Price. I mean, he lives up in
absolutely.
A castle.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
In a
definitely.
Gothic castle.
Definitely. Oh,
yeah. And, that bitch and, practices witchcraft.
Yes.
Bitchcraft.
And, like,
mm-hmm.
Yes, and it's also just like people using their forces to change things. Like there's so much of that. Like everybody wants to like take whatever it is that they got and put it into Edward and like make him a part of the town and control him like their way. Like that was I don't know, there was a lot of like witchy stuff going on. And then also just like the overall obsession with body parts is like so witchy to me. Like if you remember in his bedroom when you're when you first show up, he has like all these newspaper clippings about hands. He's obsessed mm-hmm. with hands. He wants human hands so badly. And then when he is getting into Winona Ryder's space, like in her little like vanity in her bedroom, she has all these magazine clippings of eyes, of mm-hmm. eyeballs. And I thought that was so interesting because it's like he is pining for hands and she is pining for eyes and he is like all eyeballs and she has hands. I don't know, there's something interesting.
Some symmetry.
Just a reminder, I did not go to film school. I'm just
you could have fooled me.
All right
you're
all
talking
right.
like a lot of a person who has a lot of needless debt.
Witchy, I say 9.8.
This is up there with the Witch.
I'm gonna give it a 7 for Witch.
I'll give it a 7. That sounds right to me. Give an average of 7.93, which is more than Silence of the Lambs, which only has a 2.67.
Oh my gosh. Mm-hmm. And that movie is all about body parts.
Totally.
Sick.
All right. Our next category, gay actors playing gay roles.
I mean, unless you want to give something
Vincent
to Vincent Price,
Price well,
yeah.
Yeah. 1%.
Yeah. I'll give it 1 for Vincent Price as well.
Yeah.
I'll give it a 0.5 for Vincent Price. Okay. Given
yeah.
it,
thank you.
Give an average of 0.83, which is currently, since we've revamped scoring system 3.0, this is the highest rated with a 0.83.
So funny.
Do okay. better, Hollywood.
Yeah.
All right, next category. You might do
but
very well.
You said
well
it's 0.33. It should be 0.66.
0.83.
Oh, 0.83. Okay.
Next category, themes of mothers.
Oh, yeah.
There's a theme of creating.
Mm-hmm.
The inventor is a kind of mother. And then, of course, Diane Wiest.
Yeah,
exactly. Like the mother-daughter pair of like Diane. And she like loves her daughter so much. She's just like, isn't she so beautiful? You know, like that's definitely a theme.
She's a mother to Edward.
Yeah. She's a mother to Edward. I'm trying to think like for the other like housewives and stuff. I don't know if we see too much like mothering going on.
No, not really.
Not really.
It's like faux outrage over like my children, you know.
Yeah. They do sort of like dote on Edward like he's their little dog or something. You know, like there's something mothery about that. But anyway, yeah. Could you say the category again? I want to make sure.
Themes of mothers.
Themes of mothers.
Like, I don't know if the movie itself, when I think, I don't think the movie is like, it's not really about mothering,
right.
Motherhood.
Not really. And
but
like,
there are some themes of it, certainly through Diane Wiest.
Yeah. And like, and also with the Winona Ryder character, and she's like a grandma reading to, I guess, her granddaughter. That's not really it's not really about motherhood though. If anything, it's about her like wistful remembering of when she was a young girl. It's like, I wish I weren't an old lady is more the energy. So I'm gonna have to give this like a 4, unfortunately.
4.
That's not unfortunate. I'll give it a 4 as well.
4. I'll give it a 4. Giving it a 4. All right, next category. Dramatic smoking. Well, there's Kathy Baker.
Kathy Baker smokes.
Right.
She has some fun smoking. I think that was all I noticed.
I mean, there's like smoke when they're like, the mob is like going up to like the mountain, you know, to the mansion on the top of the mountain. So there's just sort of like, you know, dry ice sort of smoke.
Right. Oh, right.
So you're saying there's dramatic smoke, but is that dramatic smoking?
Well, things are smoking. Again, it's not a bullseye. It's not a 10. It's not a full 10, but you know.
You would expect.
I think it's Kathy Baker is like the real. Much. She's the pulling all the weight for this category.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm like expect. I'm thinking back on it. I'm like, there should be more smoking. I feel like in the reality of like Tim Burton's upbringing in Burbank in the 50s or whatever it was. I don't know.
60s probably.
I don't know. There must have been more smoking. Like all the housewives would be smoking so much, and like the daddies when they come home from work, like everybody must have been smoking. But in this film, not so much.
Yeah,
how,
who could say
how
what year
woke?
This movie takes place? No one can say.
Nah, like 2%.
2.
I'll give it a 2 as well.
2. I'm going to give it a 3, and that's all for Kathy Baker.
All right. You got the Kathy Baker bump.
Kathy Baker bump. All right, our final in the bonus categories, quips. How quippy is Edward Scissorhands? Are you just laughing your butt off when you watch Edward Scissorhands? Hold me. I can't. Ugh. Goth. Save it for Tumblr.
Yeah. Not really quippy. It's not that kind of a movie. This isn't
it's
like Gilmore Girls.
No. I got...
This
there
is
was
not
two,
Gilmore Girls.
I got two things that I wrote down for here. One was early on when all the kids do come back and Anthony Michael Hall has his arm around Winona Ryder. She says, don't forget your arm, and like takes it off of her as she like walks away.
Oh, that's funny.
Showed him.
There's that scene after Edward's been like arrested where like there's a psychologist who's like, he's this, he's that, he hasn't developed this to fit into society. And the cop goes, but will he be all right? And the psychologist is like, yeah, he'll be fine. Like that was sort of like
great.
A very like vaudeville-y kind of like shticky setup there. So that's all I have for quips. It isn't a very like quippy movie.
Right. It's definitely not that kind of movie. It's not really a movie with like words. It's more a movie that you like watch and you like drink in. And I like it for that because, like, if I did not speak English, I think I would still, like, understand this film.
For sure,
you know?
Right.
It's like a ballet. It's wonderful.
There is actually a famous Edward Scissorhands ballet that happened.
I'm not surprised. Oh, my gosh. I bet it's so pretty. I would love to see.
Edward Pointy Feet is probably what it's called, right?
No.
Oh, man.
You can only dance the role once.
That's so right. So I'm just gonna be like so real and say for this film
please.
It gets a 0, but this podcast for quips 100%. Well done, gentlemen.
Give it a 0.
I'll give it a 1 for quips.
I'll give it a 1. Give it 0.67. All right, finally, kind of finally, we are into the iconic categories. So you're going to score these from 0 to 100. These are like the heavy hitters, kind of umbrella academies that cover themes of which we've already kind of discussed earlier. So the first one, on a scale of 0 to 100, how would you rate Edward Scissorhands for homoeroticism?
I mentioned this earlier, but I do feel like the relationship between the Vincent Price character and the Edward character, there is some kind of like homoerotic like tension, I guess I want to say, mm-hmm. that perhaps I'm projecting onto it, but I'm receiving it. I'm seeing it. Okay. I'm pointing it out. It's palpable. It's there for me.
Great.
And it's kind of the backbone of the movie. So
the sexual tension between Vincent mm-hmm. Price and Johnny Depp.
I'm going to say 8.5 because it could be more so. As we mentioned.
Out of 100?
Okay. Yeah.
You know, we're back
oh, whoa, wait, 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 wait.
Yes, we're back to out of 100 now.
You were trying to trick me.
No,
we were trying to trick me.
I think I was pretty clear when I said 0 to 100.
I'm here to do good work, okay? I have to be Beetlejuice tonight. So, all right. What I meant to say was 85%.
Okay, that makes more sense.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't think it's a very homoerotic movie. Like I feel like if when it gets remade, it will go there. That will it will probably be have that sort of more of a theme to it. But I have to give it a 35.
35. These scores are crazy.
These scores are crazy all over the map.
I'm gonna give it a 2. It's just nothing. There's no, to me, there is, it is like paternal. It's like father and son. It's like Lord and creator, you know, creator and thing.
What
so
I like,
to me, it isn't like, there's, to me, it's more sweet than like sexy.
What I like about this podcast, exactly. It's like all of these scores are coming from our individual vantage point, right?
Absolutely.
We're not like pitting all the films against each other. We're not, it's just nope. what we see.
How are we responding. Get.
I love it.
Speaking of what we see, that's a terrible transition. Camp Factor. How campy is Edward Scissorhands?
I would argue it's pretty campy.
It's campy. Incredibly campy.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm thinking about things that, like, okay, here's some evidence of camp for me. There were things about it that I didn't understand when I was little that I understand more as I grow up. At like the heightened reality of the suburbs, it's so funny. It's so, and like the way they do the hair and the nails and the clothing, it's like, so there's so much camp in like communicating what Tim Burton's perspective is on like classic Americana, the suburbs, you know, like that's
sure.
cool. And with the look of what Edward Scissorhands is, it's sort of like a modern day like Frankenstein. It's like, let's do an update of Frankenstein for this era that this movie came out. And Tim Burton like looked at the hair of that guy from The Cure. Robert Smith is his name.
Yes.
Yeah. And was like, I'm just gonna recreate that hair and put it on my monster. That's so campy. That's so fun. Like, you have to like know these things to like appreciate it. So yeah, it's pretty campy. I would for me, for like what I want out of camp, I'm good with it. I give this like 98%.
98.
Yeah, I think it's incredibly campy. I'm going to give it 95 just because there's no one cross-dressing in the movie.
Mm. I got a good old list of campy things I noticed.
Can't wait to hear it.
Okay, thank you. An actor in old age makeup. This little girl being subsumed by her bed. A determined Avon lady. These phenomenal sets. A crazy religious lady that no one takes seriously. Browbeating your neighbor into hosting a barbecue. Ambrosia salad, the gayest salad. Having flames painted on your car. Bowling trophies. Ladies who get all horny over swans. Naming your poodle Alexis. Having an orgasmic haircut, kid-sized shopping carts, which are just capitalism indoctrination, seducing a robotic man-child by trying on different smocks in the back of a beauty salon, mm-hmm. a sunken living room, frenzied local news reporters, a group of moms turning on one of their own, fake Christmas trees, the final form of Christmas trees, and finally, this ending laying it on a little thick is unintentional camp, I would say.
Oh my God, that list. Oh, you just like hit me in the face with it. It's so good. That is Edward Scissorhands. Yes.
To me, it is campy, but it's also not very queer. So I'm going to give it a 75.
Got it. Okay.
And then finally, for iconic, you'll probably do very well in this, over the top wardrobe.
I mean,
constant.
All of it.
Yeah. Like, is there any, like, even the drab wardrobe of the bank, the police, and the psychologist,
all stylized,
still so stylized. Yeah. And like, I was looking at the cop car and the way that siren looks, like the red light, it looks like sexy. It looks fun. Like, I really enjoy
like candy, like a Jolly Rancher.
Yes. I'm like, oh, like, you know what? Like, definitely defund the police, but like, still drive around LA with
can
that.
Can we keep the siren?
Keep the
can we keep that light? Like, that's fun. So, yeah. God, I love all of it. 100.
All our mailboxes should have sirens on top when there's mail in there. When the mail goes up.
And like, when the Republicans or whatever are like ditching all the mailboxes, still keep those lights. Like, keep it on there.
Thank
yeah.
you.
Wrap it up in the fake Christmas tree lights. Yeah. I don't know.
It is shocking that like the look of like Edward himself is like so different from the suburb, the rest of the world of the movie, but it all works as a piece together.
Yeah, I'll go 100 as well for the top wardrobe. I think it's just great.
I think a lot of ways Edward Scissorhands like predates. I'm sure they're all inspired by like the goth scene of the 80s, you know, like Bauhaus and all that shit. But this such like it looks like pre Matrix. It looks like, you know, the first X-Men
it's all
movie.
The Crow,
it's all that.
Right.
Yeah, you got to give Edward Scissorhands 100 in over the top wardrobe.
So good.
All right, finally, now we're into the crown jewels, our last two categories.
So these we agree on. We all have to agree completely. There's no range. It's either we all decide yes or no for these next two categories.
Okay, we're going to bring our minds together for this.
The first category, a 15% bonus for a positive portrayal of homosexuality. Does Edward, do you have a case for this, Lorraine, on your little notepad?
This was the area where I really struggled. I mean,
So did Tim Burton.
Yeah. It's like, I guess I think it's a really, like, representation matters, does it not?
It does.
So I've
heard, yes.
Yeah. So, like, here is Vincent Price, like, thriving on screen, really crushing it.
His last movie.
Last movie. For all we know, he dropped dead on camera.
They said he did faint.
He did pass out. The shot of him passing out in the movie, he did actually faint in that shot.
No. And Johnny Depp just stood there acting.
Maybe he just thought he was great. What a great take.
Tim Burton didn't say cut. Oh, so you keep acting.
That is so, like, too much. That's too many things. Wow. I consider that a positive portrayal. But I mean, is that enough? No. No.
Yeah, I wouldn't. I don't think it gets that, unfortunately.
No.
We can't do it. And then finally, negative 50% if this is the movie Boat Trip.
This is not the movie Boat Trip, so will we not be docked 50% of its points?
Okay, thank you.
All right, so that
is Lauren,
it.
How do you think you did?
I don't know. Pretty good.
Do you think you beat Beetlejuice?
If I did not beat Beetlejuice, I'm going to be so shocked. I'm going to have to go back and rewatch Beetlejuice.
Well, here's a reminder. Okay. Beetlejuice has 55.34%.
It's not like I was paying attention to all the numbers throughout this record.
No, no, no.
Just tell me what's up. I'm ready.
You ready? Mm-hmm. All right. So out of a total possible 2,469.47 points, Edward Scissorhands has scored 1,859.8 points, giving it a percentage of 75.31, making it the ninth gayest movie ever made. Not as gay as Cats, but gayer than Labyrinth.
Wow.
Congratulations. You made the top 10.
Whoa. That's pretty good.
Yeah,
that's
such a humble.
Exciting.
You were selling yourself short this whole time.
Mm-hmm. Oh my gosh! Wow. I mean,
now imagine if it had a gay person in it. What it,
I
how
know.
It would have scored.
Through the roof. It's like, watch out. What was it? What's the one?
Female
to look
trouble.
At your face. No, the Bradley Cooper, Lady Gaga.
Stars Born.
Stars Born. It's like, watch out, because we're coming for you. Anyway, whatever. I'm being an idiot. This was so fun. What else do you two got? Anything? Or is that it?
What else do you got?
What do you... Yeah. Thanks for... Is there anything you'd like to plug, promote, or shill for?
I mean, everybody, just, like, do your best out here. Because it's fucking crazy. Like, I just, like, plug, like, humanity. If you want to, you can watch me not tweet very much. I'm at Lorraine with 5 R's. And sometimes I post on Instagram. I'm at Lorranky Dank. Good luck to you finding it. Oh my God. I'm around. I'm Lorraine de Graffenreit. Check it out.
Check you out.
Check it. Well, thank you so much. You were a pure delight. I love when it gets comes to win. And you certainly did.
Yeah, this was fun. Thank you both
but
so much.
But I feel like we
everything.
All won.
I agree.
All right. All right. And...
We'll be right back. We're back.
What a delightful
Lorraine
lady.
Delight? She's a delight.
So fun. I so love fun. When a guest comes to play.
Yeah. It's nice.
Familiar with the show. Mm-hmm.
She had categories, like what she had to do, was interested. Yeah.
She was invested.
Great. Definitely. Speaking of invested, we've got some emails here we want to share. This one comes from Jessie. She writes, hello. Big fan of the show and so excited you fellas got around to Clue, especially with Jeff Hiller as a return guest. Yes, it was very lucky. Jeff is wonderful. And she says, my best friend and I cross-dressed as Professor Plum and Mr. Peacock last Halloween and had the best time assembling our costumes. I wanted to share our interpretation of Michael McKean's character sexuality. At the end of a recent rewatch, my darling Mr. Peacock turned to me and said, his wife, with dramatic air quotes. That's right, Mr. Green is in the closet at work, it being 1954 and all, and he took the undercover opportunity to live his truth for an evening. It may not be canon, but we believe the character is truly gay. It's simply more fun and also makes a lot of sense when you think about it. Goodbye, Jesse. That's an interesting...
That's possible.
Possible. Sure. I do like the idea of that. It actually made it very sweet for like to imagine like someone closeted to be like, oh, go undercover as a gay person and I will actually be more free. Like there's something about that that sort of feels kind of sweet.
Like Batman.
How so?
Well, you know, Bruce Wayne's really the mask, but
gotcha. Batman is the true self. Yeah. All right. I guess it's just like that. Thank you, Jesse. That is a very interesting theory.
It is. I mean, if that's true for you, great.
Sure.
Is it true for me? I don't know. Maybe. I don't know. I could be convinced.
Mm-hmm. Well, when Michael McKean's a guest on our podcast, we will ask him.
Oh, can we get him?
Could we please?
I asked Instagram if they had any questions for us, and I got so many responses. I can't possibly answer them all. I think we will do for the Patreon, which will exist by the time this is released.
Exactly, yes.
Fingers crossed. For the Patreon, we're going to do an episode that's just listener Q&A. But here's some I thought we could answer quickly.
Okay.
At Will Conover asks, been loving every episode. Thank you, but it's not a question. with theaters reopening, when will you return to the cinema? Heart. John, when are you going back to that theater? When are you going to take another nap?
I have no plans to. I don't think, I know some movies are starting to come out in the next week or so, but I'm not going to them.
They already did. But when we record this, that Russell Crowe movie, Unhinged, was in like 400 theaters, I think. I mean, the AV Club had a great interview with two like virologists, essentially. I forget what they're actually, but they said a theater is literally the last place you should go right now during a pandemic.
Yeah.
Because you're enclosed. People are going to take their masks off to eat, to laugh, to drink. You can't possibly clean it enough. And also for me, like there's nothing I love more than going to the movie theater. I would go like twice a week.
Sure.
And I just don't think I'd be able to relax watching it. It seems like not fun. And the whole point of going is to go and forget your troubles. But I feel like even now when I linger too long in like the grocery store, or any like smaller building, like it feels like, okay, I got to get out of here.
Yeah, when the scientists say it's okay, not when the movie theaters specifically reopen or anything like that. But yeah, I mean, also like, who knows? When this podcast comes out, as you said, some movies will have already opened in theaters, but who knows where we're going to be when this comes out. What else you got?
All right. Free Dak Thompson asked, who would be, what? what would be today's equivalent of Paul Lynde and Charles Nelson Reilly? You're listening to a
hello. No. Thank you.
I don't know. I thought about this because I knew this ahead of time. So I was like, I don't know who it, like, because I was, what's Billy Eichner?
Billy
maybe?
Eichner, I think, is in competition. I think John Early is another one.
But I feel like there's also something that you can't replicate from those guys, because there was something to the fact that it was always with a wink, like, you know what I mean, there was was kind of like a no, like cool people understood that they were, you know what I mean,
sure,
like there was like part of the joke, and it's just like a different time that it just feels, so I can't think of, like, yeah, there are great actors and comedians, but it's just not the same anymore. There's a less
I get what you're saying. I think, but I think if you try to think of like people who like are they are like personas as much as they are actors, and so I think also Mario Cantone might fit into that, or like a
sure, anyone who does a voice for like a sidekick in a Disney cartoon.
Exactly. Not Josh Gad though.
No, straight, he's gay erasure. Well, this, we got a ton more questions. Can't get to all of them, but thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we'll get to them eventually, hopefully.
We absolutely will. But if you want to follow us on Twitter and Instagram, we're at Two Old Queens, T-W-O Old Queens. You can also follow me on Letterboxd, where I maintain the current rankings of the movies with their categories.
Yes, you can also email us at Two Old Queens, T-W-O Old Queens at gmail.com if you have any other questions or thoughts or theories you'd like to share with us. Also, as you know, we have merch now. So if you want to help support us and also donate to a good cause, go to TeePublic and search for Two Old Queens. There's also a link in our show notes, so you can do that.
Oh, and next month, we're very excited. It's my favorite time of year. Spooky season. We're starting the return of Five Cold Screams.
Yes.
This was 5 weeks of horror movies.
Yeah, this is a perfect transition into that.
Was it?
Well, I think so. Edward Scissorhands is sort of on the cusp of going into...
I thought you meant from talking about the t-shirts.
No.
Sorry. I can't see the forest for the trees.
It's been a long night.
It's been a long night.
All right.
Thank you for listening. We love you guys. Stay Alrighty. Safe.
Goodbye. Now it's time for credits. We got music by Danny Cohen.
Artwork by Connie Shin.
And special thanks to Alex Arche and Mike Rennie.
Bye.
Goodbye. We didn't get that right.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.